is Hyperspace Theology, exploring what we can know about life and faith and God Almighty through a galaxy far, far away.
Hi, y'all. We're about ready to talk about some Star Wars. Like, it just in some Star Wars. It's
we're fixing to get this going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to Hyperspace Theology, a show in which we're exploring theology through the lens of a galaxy far, far away. From belief to redemption, orthodoxy to resurrection, the Star Wars galaxy is jam-packed with theological themes, and we are going to crack them wide open. Hopefully, this can be of help to you in your journey of faith, or at the very least, can enhance your appreciation for the galaxy we all know and love. I'm your host, Jared Mays, and joining me once again this week, fresh out of the Sarlacc pit, is Dr. Kevin Burr.
Beskar doesn't corrode.
Yeah,
I haven't tried Boba Fett accent before. I'm just going to admit. I'm throwing that out there. That we can edit that in post.
But. Mr. Morrison. Yeah, we're sorry, Mr. Morrison.
With all due respect to Mr. Morrison.
That's a little north of New Zealand.
Well, his accent is a different kind of accent. We've got Dr. Nope. Try this again. How are you, Scott?
I thought I was going to get another introduction.
I'm doing all right. Loving the Book of Boba Fett so far. So
yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Are you through every episode so far?
Oh yeah. I've watched several. I watched a couple of them multiple times. Just I follow other creators who break down all the stuff, and they bring up some points and stuff like that I hadn't considered as I'm watching it. So I'll rewatch it and see if they were true or full of Banta Poodoo.
I haven't got the chance of rewatching any of them yet. Nothing like starting a new job to totally drain your free time. I'm barely managing to squeeze in each episode as they come out. Woke up extra early last week to make sure. It still took me 3 tries to make it through episode 5. 1 as I was making coffee in the morning. 2 as I was drinking my coffee. And then 3 after I dropped my daughter off at school. When I got into my office before any of my coworkers showed up, and I officially started my work day. But it's phenomenal. I'm absolutely loving it. We're not going to spoil it tonight, especially because the esteemed Dr. Kevin Burr has not yet, caught up totally. He's watched 4 out of 5.
Episode 5. I just hadn't gotten 5. Yeah.
So we won't say too much about that one tonight. We're not going to go full spoilers. We'll talk a little bit about something that happens in episode 4 in tonight's episode. Before we do, though, let me ask you guys, what's one thing you're loving the most about the show, or one plot element you want to see followed up on? What's something that's got you thinking? Initial reactions on the show? Sky's the limit.
I think part of it for me is seeing a bit of a change and a little more smaller story, if you will, in Star Wars. A lot of times these are sprawling epic tales that where you travel to multiple planets and stuff. And this is a much smaller tale, very personal journey. And that's kind of what I'm enjoying about it is you can kind of see a person, and even like the man on the street in Tatooine, what the life is like for him in this post-Empire world.
Well, that's what's so great about the saga films, is that they are a space opera. And that in and of itself, they're inherently sprawling, right? They're mythological.
I love that about the films.
Scope. And so this is much more like what's in the expanded universe, the books and the comics, the stuff that I fanboy about. Because you do have a lot of books that are just a smaller tale about one particular character. Boba Fett goes from being this man who's feared across the galaxy, he's a lone wolf, to we just see a different side of him. We see some tremendous character growth. I especially love the dynamic between him and Fennec Shand, where somebody comes in and is trying to, wheel and deal with them. He's the new major domo, or what is it? What's it called? The title?
Sometimes Star Wars words get lost.
Daimyo. That daimyo is a new daimyo on Tatooine. Yeah. In Mos Espa, somebody comes in to pay him tribute. And he says, okay, that's good. See you next week. You can bring your money next time. And Fennec Shand then says, if you don't, I'll cut you down. I just love that he's like the kind uncle who like doesn't really, he takes in the street youths And it's like, I'll give you guys a job. And she's like, I'll decapitate you in a heartbeat.
It's very good cop, bad cop.
It is. I love it so much. What are you loving about the show, Kevin?
Scott really touched on it. The smaller story, Jared, you mentioned the personal growth. It's fascinating. On Wednesday nights here at church, I'm teaching a class on how to question one's faith without losing it.
Oh, my goodness.
And we're talking specifically about the inevitable process that every Christian goes through at varying times in their lives of deconstruction, where it's not inherently a bad thing. It can't certainly can be, but it's not inherently a bad thing when you look at what you believe and you begin to test that and poke and prod it a little bit. New experiences, crisis, and transitions can lead one to that. And I suspect that being dumped unceremoniously into that Sarlacc pit was probably quite a crisis for Boba Fett. And he comes out and then has this new experience with these Tusken Raiders. And we see what is essentially, like Scott had mentioned earlier, a changed man. I feel like the showrunners are like Favreau and Filoni and Rodriguez. Yeah. Thank you. I feel like those guys are doing a good job at trying to show Boba Fett as, although he's still kind of a crime boss, he's honorable in certain ways. And I think that that's interesting because honor is not really something that we see much. It's not a big cultural value in American culture that I'm especially aware of. In some pockets of pockets of American culture, it is. Yeah. But I look at that and think, wow, this is really fascinating how even though he's still sort of a bad guy, he's got a code and he follows it and he's willing to stick by it, even when it's inconvenient, which means he's got conviction. There's some really interesting things there.
Yeah, that's one of the things that has been true about the character for decades in the expanded universe, the books and comics that I love, is that he is an anti-hero. Mm-hmm. He has his code of honor. And honor is such a huge part of that character. They could have gone anyway as they Disney-fied Boba Fett. I like to think about, the fan outrage back when Attack of the Clones came out in 2002. And Boba Fett goes from being the coolest, doesn't take anything from anybody kind of character in all of Star Wars, to then saying, Dad, Ton Wee's here. He goes from being this fearsome bounty hunter to kind of a wimpy little kid. And so this is a good course correction, but it's not, he's not just kicking everybody's tail. He's taking a lot of hits. He's not succeeding at everything he does. And that's, of course, caused some fan outrage, as there's always fan outrage when it comes to Star Wars. But for me, I've certainly enjoyed it. In fact, as we've talked about everything that surrounds the show and this character, we're going to talk about one particular moment that I think is series defining so far for the book of Boba Fett. Now, when it comes to spoilers, we're not going to reveal any major reveals or plot points. We're going to talk about one small moment from one episode. That being said, we would still first encourage that you go and watch Book of Boba Fett, all the way through episode 5, if possible, because we'll probably reference 5 a little bit. But in particular, episode 4 is what is in scope for this episode. What you could do, this is me starting to sound Southern. You know what you could do is pause this episode. Don't delete it. Just pause it. Watch episode 4, then come back to this episode and hear the discussion, participate along with us. Regardless of how you do it, here's the gist of it. Episode 4 of the Book of Boba Fett, Boba shares this intimate personal moment with another one of these kind of lone wolf bounty hunter types. It's like, I work alone. I don't need you. Even though he had just saved her life and brought her to like a techno tattoo artist who also could like cybernetically implant internal organs. It was wacky.
Yeah.
We'll say that much. And he explains to her that it is good to belong. It is good to have a family. I learned how valuable it was to have a tribe. I'm trying to find the exact quote, guys. You want to help me out here? Is this a fair summation of what we saw in episode 4?
Yeah, he remarks that everybody needs a tribe, right? And what does she say to him about his time?
She says that the Tuskens have made him weak.
Yeah,
and he says that they have made him strong.
Ooh, yeah.
and that you know that he is and now I'm paraphrasing that in the community he found a lot more strength and found
we did not pull up the exact quote, which I'm regretting. Yeah. Let's be honest, listeners. I'm sure you're screaming it in your car, or if you're out walking your dog or your cat. Do people walk their cats? I think I ask this every time.
No, people generally let them out and hope they don't come back. I'm sorry. That might be mean. No, I think Scott got the gist of it pretty well. Yeah, she's not angry. She just accuses him, like, you know, your time with the Tuscans have made you soft, because she. It seems like she thinks about needing a community as a weakness because you need somebody else. Yeah. And he says, no, it's made me strong because he grew and became a better fighter and a leader. And a leader capable of looking out for a community besides just himself. And those would be, I think, reasonably so counted as strengths, not weaknesses.
Yeah, he found value in learning humility as he realized he wasn't as awesome of a fighter as he always thought he was, and he had to learn a totally new way, a new framework. He found value in love and caring for his tribe members among the Tuscan Raiders. He found value in being teachable. He found value in being able to rely on other people. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? I got to admit, I've been a little weepy lately. Life, we've gone through this massive transformation, relocating across the country, starting a new job, and there's so much emotion wrapped up in it. I'll blame it on that. But I was weeping at that scene. It was so beautifully crafted, just around the campfire, just nothing but the little flicker of the campfire light on their face.
I have to ask the question, where do they get their campfire wood? I have never once seen a tree on Tatooine. So where did he get all this wood to have these campfires? There's three campfires in this.
Yeah,
maybe four in this whole thing.
You just ruined the entire
did he have Scott. To? Did he have you. To snort another lizard to go on a vision quest to collect the wood again? Or
there was a tree. The tree was in the vision quest. That's right.
Yeah, I would be surprised.
Harvested the tree from his dreams.
Well, the whole place used to be like there used to be oceans, and so I wouldn't be surprised if those oceans supported some kind of arbor life or something like that, and maybe all that stuff is just buried underground like those weird little pod things that they drink from.
Yeah, we can go with that. It was just something that kind of that someone had offhandedly mentioned it, and I never thought of it, so you guys are welcome now.
Well, he made his staff too. Staff out of wood and then metal.
His gaffy stick.
Naffy stick, that's the word.
Yeah. Oh man, that's hilarious, Scott. Here I am describing the beautiful intimate moment, and then you point out the plot hole. Where are they getting their wood on Tatooine? Well, this is not an episode about where they get firewood on Tatooine. It is, however, an episode about the importance of community, the importance of family, the importance of belonging. In fact, this is really well done within almost called it The Mandalorian. It's really well done within the book of Boba Fett. Episode 5 also has a great moment regarding a person's relationship to their community, as Din Djarin, the Mandalorian, in this particular episode, is kind of caught between a rock and a hard place when it concerns his kind of strict legalistic cult that he belongs to, right? The what are they called? The Keepers of the Watch or something like that?
The Children of the Watch.
Children of the Watch. That was for pulling it out of my hat. Pretty close, right? Children of the Watch, this legalistic sect. They said, have you ever removed your helmet? And he said, oh, yeah, actually about that. Uh-huh, I have. And then it forces him to, have to re-examine his position within that group. Let's talk about this from a Star Wars point of view before we move on to the Christian point of view. Scott, you were talking about this a little bit pre-show. what has been your take on Din Djarin's relationship with being a Mandalorian?
Well, to me, it seems like now his kid's off to school. He's got, you know, his quest has been completed and he's done things that he didn't think he would have to do, i.e. remove his helmet. And, you know, he had to do it in order to protect and save to rescue the child and to get Grogu, to get him back. And also now to at the end, so he could look at him with his own eyes and say goodbye. So these were important milestones for him. And now he goes back and he's kind of, I think it seems like he's a little bit lost. He finds his covert and falls back into these strict ways. And it seemed like when they asked if he had removed his helmet, you know, there's a long pause there where he's like, I don't know if he's thinking, oh yeah, that's right, I'm not supposed to do that. Or, or if he was contemplating lying and he didn't lie, which I think is a strong point of character for him, even though he knows what it meant.
Yeah.
He still did, but he was still
coming back to honor.
Yeah. And he was still seeking out his community that he had. And maybe I can't put too much into this at this point in the story, but maybe he's rethinking this community based on the fact that he's seen other Mandalorians.
And he's beginning to realize that, and we'll see where this goes in Mandalorian season 3. It seems to me that he's beginning to realize that his tribe isn't just people that wear suits of armor just like him, but that his tribe is going to look much more eclectic, right? He's got this little green alien that's a part of his tribe. He had a robot, right? IG-11, part of his tribe, and a little pig man, Kuwiel, the Ugnaught. It's not exactly what he meant, but coming to realize that diversity was a good thing within his community.
Even if you look at the people who helped him rescue Grogu, there was other Mandalorians, but a different sect of Mandalorians. And then there was also, you had Cara Dune and you had Fennec Shand was there. And, you know, so you had not just the strange aliens, but other people who looked like him, but weren't his original sect of people.
The fact of the matter is, we believe that Christianity is best done in community rather than simply in a vacuum. Scott and I used to worship together. In fact, Scott, you know, one of the beautiful things about our friendship during those first 12 weeks of the pandemic, you all were having to come, your family was having to come to the church building to use internet. And you were doing Zoom meetings for work and your daughter was working on, you know, online school. Got to say, the fact that I just saw friendly faces, had contact with humans in person, in my circle during the time in which it felt especially charged to just being around people felt so dangerous. We've learned a lot since then, or maybe we haven't, and that's the problem. The fact of the matter is, it was really what kept me going, just seeing and being with your family. Now, what is the importance of community for us as humans, but especially as Christians? Kevin, I know
there's,
that you preached.
There's
on
an
this
easy
this
question
morning,
to
so
answer.
I want to hear Scott's take on it. It's often been hammered. There's this one passage from Hebrews about do not forsake the assembly. And so growing up in kind of strict churches, it was like, this is the command. You have to go to church. The Bible says so. I think that at this point in my life, I've got much stronger reasons for why I encourage church attendance than simply because there's a Bible verse that says you better do it. Right?
Mm-hmm. I think that part of it is you can help lift each other up, that, you know, you get a certain if you're like down or questioning something, you can talk to somebody. And a lot of times that can either confirm something or maybe help you down a better, a different path than what you were doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say better, but I'm biased. I am, after all.
I don't mean just sitting there watching
their
you.
Church members to come back to worship. Yeah, right.
I don't mean it just. I don't mean just sitting there watching you, you know, in one of your riveting sermons, but you know, sometimes just sitting there chatting with other parishioners and stuff like that really can help you, you know, feel connected.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. One of the strong reasons I give to people is you don't know what impact your smiling face is going to have on somebody at worship. You don't know what impact your voice. Oh man. I mean, just the people I'm sitting next to right now, I'm hearing new voices in a new church. And at the end of church, I just turned to the people around me. I was like, you got a beautiful voice. I was moved by your singing. They look at me like I'm crazy. It meant the world to me to just listen to people my age singing at the top of their lungs. Meant a lot to me. You don't know what impact your presence is going to have on another person. Your words of encouragement, your comments in Bible class, right? Kevin, you preached on this morning. Why is it important that we do Christianity in community?
Yeah. The most meaningful relationships we have are transformative. They're positively transformative as opposed to negatively transformative. How many times have you met somebody like at the barber shop or something like that, and they're talking about their significant other, and they describe how maybe they used to be a little rough around the edges and things like that, but then they kind of straightened out, kind of turned away from some of their immature ways. I mean, that's essentially the same kind of thing as the same kind of phenomenon where a relationship that you have with somebody of a deep, meaningful friendship is one where you're both kind of growing together in good ways that both help you move past some immaturity or move past or maybe grow out of some vice or something like that. And it requires another person I think all the time to grow to the maximum that one can grow. It requires some other person.
Yeah. Well said. Absolutely. Well said. The fact of the matter is, in scripture, we don't find examples of people doing faith in a vacuum, especially, you know, in the New Testament, we don't find examples of Christianity on an island. There was always community. In Acts chapter 2, Peter preaches, you know, the first gospel sermon of the Christian age, right? He preaches the great Pentecost sermon filled with the Holy Spirit after the ascension of Jesus, and people receive the word. People are cut to the heart. People are baptized. People repent of sins, they confess Christ as Lord, and then they gather into community. They come together to break bread. They come together to devote themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship. You know, you mentioned, Scott, just having conversation with other parishioners, right? Just being together and sharing life together. And it wasn't a part of Peter's sermon. And after you're baptized, you better be in the pews on Sunday. They simply did. They wanted to be together. Seemingly, they found value in celebrating the resurrection of Jesus with one another. And God did great things through it. What would be some more words of advice you might have for somebody who's listening to this, who, let's say they love Star Wars, they're here for the Book of Boba Fett conversation, and they're feeling like, you know what, I haven't been to an assembly of God's people in a long time. Maybe it's because of COVID. Maybe it's for some entirely different reason. Maybe they long ago gave up on assembling together with God's people because God's people didn't necessarily act like God's people. Whatever the reason may be, what would be some words of advice you both might have for somebody in one of these situations?
I mean, we just would go. That's, you know, and if it didn't work out, if we sat there and it was like, gee, I don't feel comfortable here, then we would look for another place. That's kind of, I mean,
yeah,
it seems simple, but you know, that it took us a while before we found the church in Leominster, you know, and found a place where we felt truly comfortable and welcomed. Sometimes you go to a place and you don't feel welcomed, and you can sense that right away.
Yeah. Yeah. I mentioned in my sermon earlier today, I described Christians as wounded healers. Mm. Yeah. People have been burned by churches in the past. Man, that stinks. I mentioned in my sermon, maybe, like, speaking to the audience, maybe you've been burned by church, maybe even this church, but maybe now is the time to extend forgiveness to somebody. Maybe now is the time to say you're sorry. Maybe it's time to bury the hatchet. Maybe it's time to jump in and roll up your sleeves and get to work. Or, you know, if you want to start going down the list of, well, I've got all these grievances against all these other people, chances are, if you really take an honest look, people could probably give a list of grievances against you. So instead of just having our anger parties, maybe it's time. Maybe it's time to kind of set that stuff aside and, or at least say, man, you know, I might not ever be able to reach that person, but even though I've been hurt and burned in the past, I can still help and work with these people, which is what Luke Skywalker should have done in The Last Jedi.
Yeah, he withdrew to the island of Octo, and there were consequences. And so that's one of the lessons we as the viewers should learn from that, is not necessarily that the filmmakers made a misstep as much as that it was an example in, this is not what you do. Surround yourself with your family that loves you and fight it out, right? Plug in, get to work, and lean on other people where you're weak. I've got a lot of weaknesses, and I need other people around me to fill in those weaknesses. And that's what church does best. One of the things I love about the small church where I served in South Arkansas right out of college in McGee, Arkansas. And if you've ever been there, you either grew up there or you pass through there on the way to the beach. There are no other options, except for us, who we chose to come and live there for a time. And that church, despite being small, despite being in a ghost town, despite, they were a beautiful picture of, hey, everybody pitches in with what we have. One family, they brought eggs for the whole church. Nobody ever had to buy eggs for the most part. You know, they were off seasons for the chickens where they were hitting the weight room and, you know, going to Disney World. No. There were times where they weren't producing as much, but for the most part, we never had to buy eggs. Other times, you needed yard work done. There was something you couldn't get done on your property. There's going to be a brother there with the lawnmower. You need a shoulder to cry on. There were some really empathetic women. You're having surgery. Hey, you were guaranteed you'd have two works with a casserole showing up at your door, right? Everybody used their gifts. No one was in need. There were faults, there were problems, but everybody pitched in. And for us, lonely, out of college, no friends, middle of nowhere, we needed church to be that for us. And they were. It's one of the beautiful things about God's intention in calling us together. God has always brought people together in community. From the earliest chapters of the Old Testament, even to now, God never intended for his people to do faith in a vacuum. Anything else you guys want to say on this?
I think you're right to point to the earliest chapters of the Bible. If you look at Genesis chapter 1, it's like page 1 of the Bible. There's a very clear series of, you know, God did this and he said, yeah, this is good. God did this and he said it was good. And if you know anything about the Bible, the number 7 is important. And 7 times God, you know, the text says that God declares that the thing he's just made is good, meaning it is going to serve its purpose. It is orderly in the best sense, as opposed to chaotic and destructive. It's orderly and therefore life-giving. And the only time anything in Genesis 1 is said to not be good is when we see a lone Adam. It is not good.
Is that the seventh rhythm in the creation?
What's that?
Is that the seventh?
Pattern? No, the days of creation are good. And then when God rests and looks at everything, it's very good.
Okay.
And so the seventh good is very good. But the one thing that is not good is the creation of a solitary human being. It's not good for man to be alone. There needs to be a partner.
And with that pattern of good, 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 not good really stands out, doesn't it?
Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So even then, like even at that point, which is describing a particular kind of relationship, right? A marriage relationship. But I think it's significant that rooted in the fabric of our humanity, I mean, it is inherently not good for a person to go it alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say for listeners who are feeling COVID weary or worried that other people are not taking it as seriously as you are, or you're scared to be back in a room around other people in closed doors. Hey, whatever the case may be there, we can debate the virus all day and proper responses to it. I would say make sure that you are plugged into a Christian community of some kind, in some way. And there are ways to let the evil one slip in under the guise of quote unquote proper precautions, which is you can find yourself divorced from the church, out on an island, not engaging in worship. Attending live stream can quickly become not watching at all or not participating at all. Not connecting with other people. Watching a live stream is not the same as engaging with brothers and sisters in Christ, lifting them up and being lifted up by them. It might have to be creative to do so in the pandemic, but God has given us the ability to be creative for his glory, and a lot of good can come from it. Well, guys, I've really, truly loved this. I, as soon as we are done, am going to dial back up episode 4 of the Book of Boba Fett and rewatch that bad boy. I can't wait. You know, Scott mentioned he's rewatched some of these, and I'm like, I'm kind of missing out. I've got a little later morning tomorrow, so here we go. I am excited to get into it. Guys, I've really enjoyed reconnecting with you. Scott, I'm missing being with you in person, but
yes,
I'm glad we've still got this.
Yes, I enjoy our time here, and I do miss it, and I'm missing your sermons. So,
oh, thank you. I have not preached since mid-December. I've been teaching an adult class. I'm preaching next week, and I'm feeling nervous about it. It's been a while. I'm going to get in there in the auditorium and practice. I can't remember the last time I practiced a sermon. So, I'm excited to try to swing and take another crack at it because it's been a while. Well, that does it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Hyperspace Theology. We would love to hear from you. Remember, you can submit an episode topic for us. You can submit feedback. You might just get a shout out on the show. You can email us at hyperspace_theology@gmail.com. You can contact us on Instagram, hyperspace_theology. Or maybe a good way to do it would be get directly in touch with me, Jared Mays, on Facebook, or at Jared Q Mays on Twitter. Gotta throw that Q in there. Am I right? It doesn't stand for anything, but Jared Mays was taken, so I needed another letter. Kevin, tell us what's up with Faith in the Folds.
So you just went with Q?
Well, my first name is actually David. So my first, the first initial was taken.
I didn't know that your initials were DJ. That's pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, that's my alias. Uh-huh.
I like it. Well, thanks for asking about Faith in the Folds. All right, so we're still in the middle of our series on the New Testament, and we're going to be rolling out. I have decided that I am not going to try to get every single little small book of the New Testament. I've got one more interview coming up. Two interviews coming up this week, and then I'm going to present what I've got on the New Testament so I can move on to some other things. The New Testament idea was a lot of fun. It's wearing me out because I was stressing about trying to get interviews for all the little books. So
if you don't do Jude, I'm going to riot.
You're lucky because I've got somebody who has already done Jude and 2 Peter with me.
Okay. Awesome.
So that's going to roll out, and it'll be great. And then I'll move on to some other things. I've got some some pretty neat ideas about some interviews I want to have. I'm excited, but I'm going to keep those pretty close to the vest until I actually get them out.
Good. Excellent. Well, I can't wait to listen. Hopefully, everybody, you are enjoying listening to this. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to incorporate your feedback in any way that you might find interesting. If you've got a Star Wars movie that you want us to talk about, you've got a particular scene that connects with you in a specific way, some kind of big question about faith, and you want to say, can you possibly connect this to Star Wars? We would love a challenge. We'll be back soon with another episode. God bless, and may the Force be with you.